in town you never heard of.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Common Folk Podcast with Ben, Morgan, and Andy.
Welcome back to Common Folk.
Hold on.
We made it to the beer.
There we go.
We might have to kill that air conditioner, by the way. It just kicked on.
It is a little
He's got it.
All right.
Yeah, we're finally at the beer, man. It's been a day, and here we are.
Yeah, we made it. The air conditioning does feel good, though.
It does feel good.
we're on the elements.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For a good portion of today.
Yeah, last episode we recorded, we were outside in the sun, but it felt good. It was nice.
It was. What an amazing space.
Yep.
That they put together.
Yep. Good scenery. Yeah. Good scenery. Pizza. So for folks who listened last week, they know where we were and where we're coming from. And here we are still in the Crofton area, but now we're in Hartington.
And that's not too far from where we were. What, 20 minutes?
About 20 minutes, yeah.
12 miles.
About somewhere. The drive, yeah.
Is that like you guys are a bigger town than Crofton?
Yeah, a little bit bigger. We're about 1,600 here.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So that's kind of double, mm-hmm. right?
I have no idea.
What was Crofton? Like
I don't know 800? Their population right off the top of my head.
800.
Oh, 800, there I you said go. 800, right.
Dang. You got it. Yep.
Okay, all right.
So, yeah, we're in Hartington. Heidi hooked us up with a little bit of time here to come down to the local brewery and bar and hang out and chat with Jason Wentz. How you doing, bud?
Good. Thanks for having me here. Looking forward to sitting down and talking with you guys.
Absolutely, absolutely. So it's called Hard Patch, is that right?
Yeah, yep, Hard Patch Brewing Company.
Okay.
So we just... renamed it this last year when I had the chance to purchase the brewing portion of the business.
Okay.
So it was Big Hair Brew House, and then we rebranded to Hard Patch Brewing Company.
How'd you guys come up with that?
It's always been a name that I've kind of wanted. I've been brewing since about 2015.
Wow.
And shortly after I got into it, I was like, I would like to, you know, eventually open up a brewery, and I think I'd call it Hard Patch Brewing Company just because some of the folks around town, they used to call Hartington Hard Patch, so it's kind of a nickname for the town.
Mm. Okay.
Got it.
Yep. So, yeah.
You've been brewing since you've been in middle school then?
Is that right? I get that a lot. I still get asked if I'm old enough to drive or buy beer. So.
Right on.
Yeah.
Right on.
That's a good thing.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll appreciate it as I continue to get older.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And I can see how that would be like a pretty common question. Like, it's got to be the getting old joke, like the guys come in and they're like, even old enough to be here?
Yeah, exactly. I hear it all the time. But used to it.
Old enough to brew beer, just not old enough to serve it. That's all.
And that's where it was actually born out of, you know, when you can legally brew beer before you can drink it. So,
That was going to be my next question. When can you? 18?
Yeah, yep. I mean,
really?
I guess I don't know the exact laws on it, but I had a cousin that was not old enough to drink back in the day, and I was 21 at the time, but he was like, well, I can't buy it, so I might as well brew it at home. And then he got his own homebrew system, and then I saw kind of what he was doing. I was like, I want to try this. So that's how I kind of got into it. Yeah,
I thought you were going to say you stepped up and you're like, I'll be your official taste tester. I'll help you out in this endeavor. You're not old enough, but I can get in there and help you out.
So. Oh, yeah, I did some taste testing for sure.
Nice. We did that once. The home brewing, and it's fun, you know, the 5 gallon bucket. Mine ended up tasting like banana bread,
or
it was like a Hefeweizen that was way heffier. So, I don't know.
You did that too,
man. I just did that, you know, you got those like I think it was Kmart at the time, and you can buy like one of those Mr. Beer kits or whatever it is. You ever remember seeing something like that?
Yep,
you get like the little plastic, barrel, and you really aren't doing anything. All you do is just like take their syrup and you boil it, and then you throw it in there with some additive and
let it ferment.
And hey, I made beer,
That can't be good in plastic. Like, come on.
Oh, I'm sure.
Who
thought
of this? Yeah. Just marketing.
I don't know.
I think when it comes to beers and alcohols in general, I mean, it doesn't really matter. Just take it down.
I mean, moonshiners, right? But that's like legit. Yeah. So
Hard Patch. I grew up not in the direct area, but around here, and I always thought the nickname was Partington. Like, you guys partied a lot.
Oh, that too.
Was that the two names between the brewery? It was Partington and Hard Patch?
Well, I never had considered that for the name, but we kind of had a reputation for that. That's funny, Partington.
I think it's still around. I think it's still up and running.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Did you grow up in Hartington?
Yes. Yep. Grew up here. Went to college down in Lincoln, UNL, and then I moved down to Kansas City for a little while. Went to mortuary school down there, came back to Omaha for a few years and then moved back here. Wife and I moved back in 2018, so we've been here coming up on, 7 years.
Nice. Is your wife from here as well?
Yep, she was born and raised here as well, yeah.
So and you guys like high school sweethearts or what?
Yeah, we've been together since I was a junior, senior in high school.
Okay.
Yeah, nice. So it's been a while. Yeah. Been married for, it'll be 8 years this year.
Okay. Yeah.
So you mentioned mortuary school. Was your family own the funeral home in town, or how's that work?
Yep, so we have Wint's Funeral Home here in town, in Hardington, Crofton, Corridge, Yankton, okay, and Laurel. So grew up around the business, and that's kind of what got me interested in the first place. So yeah, I moved back here and was in the business from 2018 until the end of 2021 full time, and then kind of stepped back a little bit. I still help on the side, when my dad needs some extra help or going on night calls and things like that. So
So you still got your license in and everything, keep that up?
Yeah, I keep that active just so I can kind of help out when they need me, because you never know when things are going to get super busy and you need an extra hand.
Okay. Yeah, well, so you and Andy have something in common. You guys can share stories.
Well, I've worked for the Wilbert Burial Vaults for a number of years.
And sure.
Then, managed a small cemetery in Omaha for a while.
Oh, nice. So,
did you work for a place in Omaha?
I was at John A. Gentleman.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
I worked for John A. Gentleman. So, no kidding. I did for about 4 years.
You worked there as well?
Yeah.
Oh, nice. Wait, Tom, you guys Belford. Probably worked together and you didn't even know it.
I don't think so.
I think they got a few years gone. Separate.
I was long he wasn't gone. Born yet? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. Andy does still look like he's 20, but he's not.
Not his 20. So, no, but that's a fantastic family. Tom Belford and the crew out there. Doug.
Yeah, we had some good times.
Frickin' Doug.
Those guys are great.
Yeah, they're great. Now they are a lot of fun. So
I didn't realize there was like a school for that. What's that like?
Mortuary school?
Yeah.
So I was down there in Kansas City for that for a year because I had already completed my undergraduate degree at UNL.
Okay.
So I just had 2 semesters, but, it's a lot of like the embalming and the theory and things like that. Just kind of learning about the ceremonies and the different religions and kind of what what to look for, what to know about all that. So it was a good program. So I was glad it wasn't longer than a year, just because I didn't know anybody down there. So moving back to Omaha was nice, where I actually had friends and family to hang out with.
Sure.
Yeah.
What'd you go to school for in Lincoln?
So in Lincoln, I got my degree in psychology.
Okay.
And was originally thinking med school. Kind of backed off of that and took a gap year, and then that's when I decided to go for mortuary school and then move home. Ultimately, I wanted to be in a small town. I didn't really enjoy living in the large cities that much, and if you're gonna become a doctor or something like that, there's opportunities in the small towns, but there's gonna be a lot more in a big city, and I knew I didn't want to live in a place like that for the rest of my life.
Did you know when you left for college, because you're coming from a small town, you go to college, did you have the feeling that you wanted to get out of the small town, or did you always know you wanted to come back?
Oh, I was ready to get out of the small town at the time. Yep, I was like, I'm going and I'm not coming back. And after being away for a few years, that sure changes. So
What is that? What, so many people say that. What changed? Like you?
I don't know. I just...
You begin to miss what you hated.
Yeah. I think a lot of it in high school is just, there's a lot of rules and you're living under your parents' house and things like that make it tough. But then when you're on your own, you kind of have your own rules and things like that. And then once you kind of mature a little bit as you get a little older, and then you realize that, the things that the small town has to offer maybe weren't so bad in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You don't really know that until you have the perspective of living in the city.
Right.
So
I think it really is that unknown. I mean, I think it's like that with anything when you're growing up, like kind of that grass is greener on the other side thing. Mm-hmm. And then you get to the other side and you're like, oh man, it wasn't greener.
Yeah.
But you kind of got to experience that to know.
Yeah.
It's hard to just take someone's word for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in a town like here, you get caught doing something fun, it's going to beat you across town. Everybody knows about it.
Yep, exactly.
You do that a couple of times, like, all right, I'm ready for Omaha or Kansas City. I'm ready to get out of here.
Yeah, for sure. I know all about that. So, I mean, even this last week, I went and rented a trailer to go down and pick up some kegs for the brewery, and not 24 hours later, people were texting me, where are you guys moving? Are you guys leaving town? It's like, I have a U-Haul in my driveway for less than a day.
Right.
Nice. Yeah.
Like, come on, give me a break.
So good, that, good and bad.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay. So the brewery and the beer thing and that, I'm curious, like, what throughout life, what's been your experience with beer and what brought you to that? So, like, when did you first start your love affair with beer? Were you, like, 16 years old or what?
Probably about 17.
17, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true.
Yeah. In the small town, you kind of get introduced to it pretty early.
We're all guilty, too. It's 100%. The same thing. You go to a farm field and
hang out. I think I was 17 when we tried our first home brewing kit.
There you go.
I think it was me.
But yeah, you know, high school, you weren't drinking the craft beer, though. You're drinking whatever you can get your hands on.
Keystone Light.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But then, you know, from there, went to college and really started to expand into the craft beer scene, and it just kind of went from there. I just really loved all the different options and stuff available, and loved trying new things. My wife and I, or girlfriend at the time, would hop around to breweries, and when we would go on vacation, we'd always hit up a couple and see what they had to offer. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's just something that we've always been interested in.
Do you think that you like beer itself more, or you like the process of making it?
That's a tough one. I would say the beer itself. I mean, I do love the process of making it as well. But yeah, I don't know. That's a hard one to answer. It's something that I enjoy the process, and then I can appreciate the beer, I think, more because I know what goes into making it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So. I don't know if this is where your head's at, but mine is really over like the last 6 months, 'cause I've, just decided to take a break from drinking. Mm-hmm. So like, I really haven't drank anything until this week,
like yesterday.
Yeah. And I always liked it. I drank way too much beer. But I wasn't really drinking for like the enjoyment of the drink, where like just the last couple of days, just having a couple of days, I was looking forward to this, like just the flavors and the experience and the friendship and the camaraderie and those kinds of things, as opposed to just pounding beers. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cause I was usually just drinking light beers left and right, like crazy, where now I feel like I've gotten a little bit better relationship with it, where this is more fun. And that's kind of what the craft beer scene kind of feels like.
Yeah. Yeah. I would agree. You know, craft beer scene, you're not, I guess I can't speak for everyone, but most of the time when you go into a brewery to try some new beers, you're not looking at drinking 20 craft beers with the goal of just drinking as much as you can. Like, you want to sit down and enjoy it and try new things. And yeah, like you said, the camaraderie and just, you know, sitting down, having a conversation with people. It's just a fun way to get out and relax. And, you know, I can relate to what you said about, you know, not drinking that much recently, because I like the taste of beer so much that I'll drink non-alcoholic beer through the week. And, you know, I'm not doing it just because I'm trying to catch a buzz. Like, I just, I like the taste more than anything. And, and it's just, you know, a social thing when you're sitting with somebody and everyone else is having drinks. It's kind of awkward to be the one sitting there without anything in your hand.
Yeah. So I've got that on my list of questions for you here. I'm glad you brought that up. NA beers, like, is that something that you guys might try to tackle, or is that just like, what is the do you know the process? Like, it feels like it's this big unknown, because I've been drinking them too for the last just this year, and the only good answer I got, we went to Boulevard in Kansas City, and they've got a bunch of different ones they're coming out with, and the guy behind the bar was kind of telling me the process a little bit. Sounded really fascinating, but is that something you guys have explored, or is that even doable in a small craft beer shop?
It's something that I definitely am going to look into. I haven't looked into it yet. You know, I know you can basically brew the beer like you would normally, and then if you heat it to a certain temperature after it has fermented, then the alcohol will come out of solution. But I haven't really done a deep dive into what it would all entail with my system. But yeah, definitely interested in doing that, because I feel like that has kind of been a little bit of a revolution in the last year or so, a couple years.
Yeah.
And I think it'll continue to go that way as well.
That's what we keep saying. We're seeing more and more people, or like, you go to events and it's almost odd if someone doesn't have NA offered.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's totally becoming a thing. So
I agree. Yeah. So maybe in the next, within the next year we can put something out, but obviously it's going to take some trial runs. Obviously, first ones we put out are probably not going to be very good, so might have to dump a few batches before we get to where we want to be.
Yeah. No, I'd love to talk to you again if you ever go down that road, just to kind of hear about that process, because like I said, I've never got a good answer. It's almost like it's a secret they're intentionally keeping.
No.
Yeah. I mean, with some people, it's like, okay, we've got, because I think there's a perfection to that process. Mm-hmm. And you can tell if you've drank enough NAs, you've had some where you're like, this really sucks, yeah. or this is water, or, you know, whatever. But one of the things that the guy at Boulevard was telling me that I thought was fascinating, well, two things. One, he said that there's a process where they're like essentially freezing it.
Okay.
And then so then the alcohol doesn't freeze, so mm-hmm. then they can skim that off or whatever.
Sure.
And the other process, what was even more fascinating, was he said they're running like a chamber, like a vacuum chamber. And, you know, when you put vacuum to it, the liquid will boil.
Mm-hmm.
And the, I guess then the alcohol is boiling out somehow like that without actually heating it and yeah. hurting the flavor or whatever. So I don't know if that makes sense, but.
Yeah, I mean, with the alcohol, it's got lower evaporation point than okay. the rest of the liquid. So
yep.
you wouldn't have to boil the whole thing if you just heat it up to a certain point where the, yeah. the alcohol will
yeah.
Evaporate, but the rest of the liquid will stay as liquid.
Yep.
Then you could remove it that way and, you know, condense it down a series of tubes to get it out.
The other thing I want to follow up with you on, and I'll get off of NA beer here, is when I look at them, the majority of them say less than 0.5% alcohol. And then some of them just stay straight up zero.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot get anybody to tell me why. I have a feeling it's a, there's like some kind of probably federal rule in the way that it's made that they have to say this or not. But if you ever find that out,
okay.
let me know. Cause I want to know what that. The deal is. I know.
He has homework now.
Yeah. yeah.
No, I'll check into that because yeah, I've noticed that as well. Some of them like Heineken, for example, that one's 0.0.
Yeah.
But then you got Busch NA that's less than 0.5.
Yeah, and even within those same families, like the Busch NA is that, and then mm-hmm. they've got Budweiser Zero that's straight up zero.
Yeah,
I feel like they're covering their ass somehow.
There's got to be something yeah. there, but or some regulation that they have to stand by.
Okay, but let's talk about alcohol
yeah.
in
yeah,
the
let's,
beer.
Yeah, let's do it. Enough
I'm
of that.
We probably
lost.
Of them.
We probably lost half of our listeners at this yeah. point. Andy's falling asleep over here.
Yeah, I'm just getting another beer, a real one.
Yeah.
All right. So, how many different beers do you brew? Is that something that you say? How do you even say this?
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah, we brew. Right now, we've got 12 different options on tap.
Okay.
One of them's a seltzer, so we've got 11 beers and wow. a seltzer on tap. And then we'll kind of rotate those out. So we're getting near the end of a couple of our options, and then I've got some new stuff ready to go that's in the cooler, and we've got some going in the back right now. So that way, when we clear those kegs out, we've got some new options for people. Do like to keep a couple mainstays on tap, though.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, because you bought out an existing business.
Mm-hmm.
Was there just a couple flagship flavors you had to keep?
So I didn't keep any of the flavors or any of the beers that we're currently on.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have access to the previous brewer's
oh, okay.
recipes and
all
things
right,
like
all
that.
Right.
So
yeah.
I replaced basically all of those with my own recipes, but kind of within the same style. So, you know, there were certain beers that were more popular than mm-hmm. others, and, you know, like your light American lager,
right.
Things like that. Those typically would sell more than other ones down here. So, like our Lane 8, we keep that one on, you know, pretty much all the time, because that one goes the best out of anything, I guess, the most volume.
And that's the fun part, right?
Yeah.
Isn't that the fun part, coming up with new flavors and all
yeah.
that? Making your own, you know,
for
line.
Sure.
I mean, how do you think of a flavor? That just seems crazy to me. How do you know what to put together?
So I'll do a little research on like a style. So if I'm going to
okay.
do something new that I've never done, then, you know, I'll look into the style, what's typically used for malt, what's typically used for, you know, like your hops and your yeast. You got to look at things like water profile for different beers. So from there, then I kind of, you know, I'll put together a grain bill based on, you know, what you typically see in that style of beer. But, you know, you obviously have to put your own spin on it too. So mm-hmm. you don't want to just straight up copy some mm-hmm. of the recipes online.
Right.
So, it's kind of a trial error process where you kind of have the guidelines that are set forth for the different styles. And
mm-hmm.
then, you know, you brew something, and if you don't like it, or if there's something that you're like, okay, that's too much of this or not enough of this, then you make adjustments going forward. And you know, that's something I really enjoy about it, because you can always make those alterations. Just a small thing will make a big difference.
Sure. I bet. Are we allowed to talk about what you guys have coming up with the Dam Race?
Sure. Yeah. We've got a new beer that we're going to be releasing for the Dam Race. I'm just going to do a cream ale. So kind
wow.
of a misnomer with the name there, because there's no cream involved in it. It's just a lighter ale,
mm-hmm.
Kind of similar to a light lager, but has a little more character to it. So want to do something that everybody will enjoy, And that, you know, you can drink at 8 o'clock in the morning after you're done running a triathlon.
No, it's going to be crisp, right? Yeah. Refreshing. Mm-hmm. And it would have to somewhat be in the same vein anyway of Nebraska Brewing Company's cream ale. It's just called cold beer. That's what they named it, cold beer. And I love it. So, and it's a not an NA. It's beer.
It's not NA.
It's not NA at all. Oh, I did want to ask you, you got a seltzer. I thought the Nebraska Brewing Company, and I know those guys are, we've had them on the show. Mm-hmm. They did a line of seltzers and they're really good, but they're like, I think it was cost prohibited and it kind of came off as maybe a pain in their ass.
Okay.
Like they thought they had to do it because everyone was coming out with the seltzer and they still have it on tap, but they don't have it in 12 packs or six packs anymore. So I was just curious, is your seltzer, does it throw a big wrench in the system, or is it just another type of a beer for you?
Yeah, not, it doesn't really throw a big wrench in the system.
Okay.
I use the same equipment and everything to brew that one. And then, you know, basically it's just water and your sugar. And then, you know, it doesn't require a mash because you're not using any grain. And then you can actually boil it for less time because a traditional beer takes about an hour for the boil, depending on what you're brewing, 60 to 90 minutes. But with that, you can, you know, you can go as short as 10, 20 minutes for your boil.
Well, I think if you could do it, you know, have another option up there, you know, because seltzers are still pretty popular.
Yeah,
for sure. And so what, like, elaborate on that a little bit, like, what's the process? What's different between the two? Because obviously seltzer is like all the rage now. I mean, you see all these popping up left and right. Certainly they taste sweeter. There's all kinds of crazy flavors of them and things like that. But what is it? Like, what's different? What's different in the process that makes it a seltzer?
So the main thing is that, you know, with a beer, you're going to have your malted barley, and that's what you are going to get your sugars and your flavor, you know, like your base grain flavor from. So there's typically no malted barley in a seltzer. So when you brew a beer, you have to do what's called the mash, and you let your grains rest in hot water for about an hour.
Okay.
And then you withdraw all the fluid, or like all the liquid from that, and that's what's going to be your wort, which is like your base of your beer.
Okay.
So you get to completely skip that step. So you basically just fill your, you know, your boil kettle with water, and then you add in just, you know, however much sugar you need to make the alcohol percentage. So that is a really quick process. And then, you know, with a traditional beer, you're going to do your boil, and you're going to add hops and, you know, a few other things throughout the boil, depending on it. 60 minutes is pretty standard for your ales. But with the yeast, or excuse me, with the seltzer, you don't have all of those different types of things. You're not, you know, you're not going to add a ton of hops to it like you would an IPA or something like that. So then once you're done adding in like your yeast nutrients and stuff like that during the boil, you just cool it down, and then you pitch in your yeast and let it go for a week or so. And traditionally, like the yeast that we've used here, they ferment super quick, so they could be done in 4 days, and then you just got to let it kind of age for a little while. But
so you're like, when you're making a seltzer, as an example, you're putting the water and the sugar in there, and you're boiling all that.
Yep.
And then basically that step is just to kind of get everything diluted.
So that you want to, you want to make sure you get your sugar all dissolved into the water.
That's what I meant. Dissolved. Yep. Wrong word.
And then you also, you got to think about sanitation. So one of the main purposes of boiling is to, you know, make sure it's sanitary and it's not going to become infected. You know, there's a lot of different ways that can get infected throughout the process, but that boil, just make sure that,
And then you put the yeast in it, and it reacts with the sugars and creates alcohol.
Yep. So the yeast will take those simple sugars and convert those into alcohol. And they put off carbon dioxide as byproducts. So, you know, if we went back there, you'd see we got a blow off tube that's just pumping out gas because the yeast are going to work.
Got it. So then you are like kind of testing that for like alcohol content or something. And then when it gets to a certain content, then you.
So typically I'll just let the yeast run until they. You know,
are done.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then you can take what's called a gravity reading, and that'll give you the, basically the percentage of remaining sugars left in solution. So you take a reading at the start before you add your yeast, and then you can test it throughout the process, and then you can kind of gauge where you're at with your fermentation.
Interesting. And then after that, you add some kind of flavoring or whatever?
You can add that, you know, at the time of bottling or canning or kegging. With ours, we just do kind of a blank seltzer. It's got a little bit of a tropical flavor to it, and then if somebody wants it flavored, there's a bunch of different flavor options that you can just add into the glass and then pour it in.
Interesting.
Because the name is Joyride, so I would have no idea. Like, what does that taste like?
Yeah, certainly whatever you want.
Yeah, this is your show. Plug it, man.
It is kind of cool that you can, that it's like whatever you want. Like, here it is, add whatever you want.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it gives you more options. Yeah.
So it's like, do you guys have like the Mio bottles and you're like...
Yeah. Kind of similar. They're the bottles that you see sitting right up underneath the taps up there.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So they're like a fruit puree that you put in.
Got nice. You. Yeah. So how do you guys come up with these names?
I kind of just...
You and your wife are at home just
yeah,
like...
Yeah, or just bounce ideas off of family and friends and stuff like that. ChatGTP every once in a while.
Oh, yeah, that's getting popular.
Yeah, and with a name like Joyride, you don't box yourself in like kiwi strawberry. You won't have someone that doesn't taste like strawberry.
Yeah.
And no, it tastes like Joyride. Yeah, it does. We nailed it again.
So have you had a pure accident that turned into something amazing? Like you totally did something wrong that you thought.
Yeah, like a Guinness.
And then it's like a Guinness this story. Awesome
I don't
beer.
Think so. Okay, no, I've had it go the other way where it turns into something that I don't want.
Oh, shoot. No. Throw a little salt in the wound there.
Hey, well, you got time. I mean, you're still early at this. Wait, you started doing this how many years ago, did we say?
So down here, I just bought this last June we started brewing.
Okay.
So,
but you've been brewing for
about 10 years.
Yeah. Yep. Okay.
On and off.
But this is your biggest still. Is there one?
I've got three barrel systems.
Three.
Yep. So we can do 9 barrels at a time.
Got you. Okay.
How much volume's in a barrel?
31 gallons in a barrel.
Okay.
Yep. So we usually end up, finished product, I'll end up with about 85 gallons off of each one of those.
Okay. So I've got the Peacekeeper Strawberry Blonde.
So good.
It is good. I like strawberry beers, and this is a good one.
Yeah. Well, Andy, what do you have?
I got the Beachcomber, a light hoppy golden ale. So.
Yeah, we got a little Citra hop flavor in that one, so it's going to be definitely on the hoppier end and kind of have that. It almost smells like kind of like an IPA, but it's not bitter like that.
It sort of reminds me of a Blue Moon.
Oh,
with
sure.
With that citrus, you know, in there. So, I love Blue Moon, so this is right up my alley.
Well, good.
So,
appreciate the
Really free feedback. Cold beer, I'm all about it.
Do you do some of these like only seasonal times, or are they all available all year round?
So far, we've had them available basically since we started brewing them. But yeah, I intend to probably do some seasonals.
Yeah.
You know, like our Oktoberfest, we had that during September, October, and then we pulled that off a couple months ago, and then we'll bring it back out probably late August. It seems like Oktoberfest is starting a month early every year as we keep going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I obviously don't run the business, so I can say this because I have no risk, but I would encourage you to do something like this only in like the summertime because that's how it used to be. I feel like when I would go to craft breweries and I couldn't wait for it to come out and then I wanted to drink it and I would buy it that much more, where now I feel like I can get these any time of the year. It's kind of like it becomes just kind of a regular thing. It's like, oh, okay, I can get it.
Like your relationship in Morel mushrooms. You don't want those things to be all season long.
100%,
you want it to be springtime, a hard end.
Like looking forward to the summer and a strawberry blonde beer or whatever, you know, it's like, it's kind of just a cool that time of year. You associate it with it or whatever, but.
Do you guys sell like
don't listen to me
growlers here too, or?
So we've got the cans that we sell for sale, but as far as growlers, we did that initially, I guess, before I was here.
Uh-huh.
They used to fill the growlers, but kind of have gone away from that just because, you know, people bring in their own growlers. You don't know how sanitary they are.
Like that, and that those like bigger cans like that, you probably have like a canning machine. If folks are watching this on YouTube, they'll see at the end of the table. So then you can just literally can it here and send those out the door.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, if we were running low on something in the cooler over there and somebody wanted a six pack, we could fill them up and send them out the door.
Oh,
very cool.
That's pretty cool how that's been developed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, talking about how you make it seasonal and keep you wanting to come back and looking forward to, there was a Sam Adams had a really cool neon bar light, and it had like 7 or 8 of their beers, and whichever one was lit up was the one that was on tap at time.
Okay.
So it always, I always thought that was a clever,
that is cool,
a light to do. And so you know, the one was always lit up, the Boston Lager, but then the seasonal one, you know, there's only one other one that was on tap wherever you were at. So
yeah.
Thought that was kind
of
neat.
No, I like that idea of, you know, doing the seasonal. That way people anticipate it and are looking forward to something like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you had to pick a beer, what would be your favorite? And it doesn't have to be yours.
One single beer. That would be my all-time favorite.
Yeah, is that hard to do when you're? Are you called a brewmaster?
I don't know if you consider me a master yet. But.
Okay, so you're a brew.
I'll give
what's
the
under
nod.
A master? Yeah, you've got to.
You can
be.
Just call me a
He's
brewer.
A Padawan.
Brewer.
A brew apprentice.
You're a brewmaster. I feel like that's what everybody's name is when you're brewing, like.
Or maybe like a favorite type or something.
You know, it kind of depends on the season because
yeah. There you go.
I could go for a good IPA like mm-hmm. anytime.
Yeah.
But if we're in the winter months, I love a good stout. You know, the dead of the summer, like a good light lager. That's kind of what I'd go for. So
okay.
It really just depends. Yeah. But I like all styles, so it doesn't really matter.
And you said your wife does drink beer too?
Yep.
She, okay. Because some ladies don't like beer.
Yeah.
I've always loved beer, but
mm-hmm. That's pretty much the only thing she drinks. She doesn't typically, you know, she'll have a glass of wine at dinner every once in a while, but for the most part it is beer. And I think that might have been a little bit of my influence back in the high school days.
So. I'm sure.
Leave it on, growing up, leave in the it up to the patch. Lady.
Growing up in the hard patch.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, so good.
Have you ever got caught or whatever? Because you notice trends coming out, like pumpkin spice. Mm. You know, then everybody has pumpkin spice everything. And I've been noticing it with breweries. And I think the latest one is pickle flavor or dill.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has a pickle beer. A lot of places have two or three different pickle flavors now. Mm-hmm. Have you ever got caught trying to follow a trend like that? You give it a go and like, oh my God, we can't get this off the shelf.
I haven't done anything like that crazy, like a pickle beer. I don't intend to probably do anything like a pickle beer just because... I don't know, that I feel like would be a hard sell, especially in a small town brewery. So I've mainly stuck with more common styles, you know, do some fruited things here and there, but I do want to kind of experiment and do some, maybe not totally off the wall things, but yeah, it's just something different, something new, but yeah, nothing quite as crazy as the pickle trend.
Right on. So when you, traveling and everything else, and because there's a, if you get to look, and there are microbreweries just about everywhere. Mm-hmm. Do you have to stop at one? You got to check them out, see what they're all about.
Most of the time, like if we have time and we're gonna be going through, we'll stop and check it out. But you know, if we're just passing through a town, then you know we usually bypass until we get to the destination, and then we definitely go check out the brewery scene.
Right on.
Yeah.
What do you think about your guys' operation and what you do, whether it's like the product you're putting out or the, you know, the whatever's behind, you know, why you do what you do? What makes you guys a little different than other breweries around or just breweries in general, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question. I think, you know, for the most part, a beer is all going to come down to the same ingredients. So you got to have a way to kind of separate yourself a little bit. And I think that comes down to just trying to put your own spin on your beers. You know, what separates us. I think the space here is pretty cool.
It is.
It's a big place that you can have events in. You know, we have people rent out the back for parties and things like that. And, you know, it's just an inviting atmosphere to come into. And I think people really enjoy having that option in a small town, you know, or even being able to travel, you know, half hour or so. You come from Yankton or surrounding communities, and we've got a place like this for people to come and enjoy themselves.
Yeah, and this building, it has some history to it. It seems like it's been on Main Street since there's been a Main Street.
Yeah.
Like there's some history here.
Yeah, this was the Surge building prior to being a brewery. So that, I don't exactly know what they all did here when it was the Surge building, but yeah, it was not a brewery until 2021. So, but yeah, this has been here. Edward Hosh had this building, and there's a bench right outside with the name on it. Mm-hmm. And it's from 1968. So from 1968 to 2020, he had this building. And then that's when they turned it into the brewery in 2020 and opened in 2021.
Very cool.
I bet you guys do have a lot of parties. You have graduations and all that stuff coming up.
Yep. Graduations this weekend. So yeah, there are a couple parties coming up this weekend, and then throughout the summer, I'm sure there'll be more. People do their bridal showers, things like that here. So, yeah.
So do you guys just open normally then on the weekends in a smaller town like this, or is it random one night during the week too, or how's that work?
It's a set schedule, so we're open Wednesday through Sunday.
Oh,
so we're closed Monday, Tuesday, and then, Wednesday through Sunday, and then the hours just kind of, they're pretty set most of the time.
Yeah.
Open up about 4, and then, you know, in the evenings, it kind of depends on the crowd. So
right.
Saturdays, probably most of the time, will be their latest nights.
Okay.
Yeah. Where do you guys distribute? Like, is it, does it just stay local? Or are you sending all over the state, or how's that working for you?
So I've been working on that the last several months, really trying to expand into other markets. So right now we are in cans in Wayne. You can find us in West Point, and working on Omaha and Lincoln. We do have a couple kegs down in Omaha and Fort Calhoun, surrounding areas down there. So going to continue to work on that, just kind of getting some of the logistics hammered out with cold storage and the canning operation. So
Did I hear that there was like some legislation or something that was passing that was going to allow breweries like yourself to like self-distribute more volume as opposed to having to go through a distributor?
Yeah.
Is that a thing?
Yep. So that passed in 2022.
Oh, okay.
So they may be looking to revise
than
it.
I thought. Okay.
But yeah, so as a brewery, we can self-distribute up to 250 barrels per year.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's a huge win for small people like like us, because if we go through a distributor, you know, that's going to take a big chunk out of your
at cost
margin
and volume and stuff. Yeah, you're probably almost giving it away by the time you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that allows us to put more in our pocket, and you know, that really helps with the cost of operation and things like that, because it's, you know, it's not cheap to buy the equipment and
run the operation. Like, I heard a larger volume than that recently.
I think they are looking at expanding it to potentially up to 2,500 barrels is what I heard last, but don't quote me on that. But yeah, that would be a big win, because then we could.
Do you know, is that like something Nebraska is kind of doing exclusively, or is that something that they're kind of seeing all around the country, or do you have any idea?
I am not sure outside of Nebraska. I haven't really looked into the other states as far as self-distribution. I've looked into South Dakota as far as like if we can distribute there, and I would have to go through a distributor in South Dakota to bring it across.
Okay.
So they...
Because you're so close.
Yeah, which is kind of a bummer, because you know, we're 25 miles from the border.
Yep.
But so you know, maybe down the road, if we max out our self-distribution, look to expand into that market. But you know, right now it makes the most sense for us to keep it in state.
Yep. I'm not trying to like put you in a bad spot or anything. This is my opinion, is that I look at the way the distribution world works in this industry pretty similar to like when we talk about like the cattle processing. Mm-hmm. You know, that there's a few big players that are pulling all the strings.
Yep.
And you're at their mercy, you know, when it comes to liquor. Mm-hmm. So I think it's really cool that Nebraska is making moves to kind of put some power back in the hands of the producer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it also allows you to be way more selective to where your beer goes, you know, so you get control on that. So sometimes I've heard some terrible stories where distributors like, I would never go there. Your beer is going there first. Yeah, if you can make it there, then you're going to. Yeah. So now you get to say like, well, there's this bar in Omaha that I'd rather this go to before it goes anywhere else. Mm-hmm. So I just think, like you said, it's just a huge win for the little guy, I guess you could say.
Yeah, exactly. I definitely agree. So really glad that is, you know, in place and potentially could expand in the future.
While we're talking about that, a question I have for you is I've heard, and just how things have been going for the last few years, that there's a lot of small breweries falling off. There's a lot of them claiming bankruptcy, just a lot of that kind of stuff going on.
Yep.
What's the story there? I mean, are you feeling any kind of pressures like that? Is it just small business in general, or something specific to the craft brew industry? Or,
you know, I it's always in the back of your mind, because you know, the craft beer industry it exploded, you know, back in what, 2008, 2009, and you know, the last several years, like you said, with everything that's going on, there's been more and more places having to shut their doors. You know, I think we see it in business other than breweries,
absolutely.
I think breweries are definitely kind of under the gun, because, you know, there's just so many of them all over the place now. Yeah. Because, you know, 10 years ago, you probably would have had to travel to Lincoln or Omaha to find a craft brewery.
Yep.
You know, it's something that's in the back of your mind, but you just got to be, you know, make sure that at the end of the day, you're watching the bottom line and making sure you're making, you
smart
know,
business decisions,
financial moves.
And I would imagine, I mean, your, you know, your clientele, the product that you're selling, you know, is how would you classify it?
I mean, it's a premium brand. It's
but what I mean is, when people are deciding what they're going to spend their money on, it could potentially be one of the things that comes first out of the budget. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with our business. We sell t-shirts, you know, we do branded merchandise and stuff like that. Yeah. So people don't have to buy those.
Yeah. We kind of call it like choice bills. It's like it's not fun, like electricity.
It's a fun thing. Like, yeah. So we're kind of the ones that are under pressure first when things start getting tough, you know, mm-hmm. which I would imagine you as well, but I don't know. It seems like you guys are doing a great job. I was just curious if you're feeling any of those pressures. And also it makes me think, you know, when you talked about making good decisions and things like that, when you decided, okay, I'm going to go brew some beer and I'm going to have a brewery and whatever, had you thought about all of the things that come with entrepreneurship, like what you're talking about with, man, I got to manage this bottom line, I got to make smart decisions. You were talking about being a salesman earlier, you know, running around and trying mm-hmm. to push the product and all of those hats that you have to wear.
I would say I probably did not anticipate the extent of what it would involve. Mm-hmm. You know, going around the sales is probably the biggest thing, because mm-hmm. you know, you have to travel around to these different bars and restaurants and things and try to pitch your product, and you know, that's something that is not something that I have been super you know, familiar with in my line of work is sales. So definitely having to adjust to that. But yeah, you know, when I had the opportunity, I knew there would be things that would come up and challenges and things I would have to learn along the way, but I didn't want to let the opportunity go and then look back 10, 20 years and say, you know, why didn't I take a chance? So, you know, even if things don't work out, then I can at least say I tried.
Yeah.
100%.
Well, and a lot of it's fun. I'm just looking at the artwork and how you guys piece together these two logos. Mm-hmm. So there's, you can see the hard patch on there both times, and it's set. It looks mm-hmm. clean. Mm-hmm. But then there's different artwork. So like stuff like that, yeah, it's time consuming and it can be a pain in the neck. You mm-hmm. know, everybody has an opinion.
Yep.
But it's fun. I think it looks like fun to me coming up with those two different labels.
Yeah. Yep. And that's something I enjoy, because I actually design all the labels myself. So nice.
Look at you.
Kind of a one man show. But that's something that I've enjoyed is the creative part of doing that. It's a little frustrating at times when you spend 8 hours and it's like, I'm scrapping it all. I hate it all.
I hate that for you, man.
Do you have a hard time as like a business owner letting some things go, like giving some responsibilities to some other folks? Like, you know, there might be things that you really love doing and you're always going to mm-hmm. do that, but then there's some other things that are absolutely critical to the business that you need someone else to do, but you just can't let it go.
I haven't really run into that yet. You know, as we hopefully continue to grow and expand, mm-hmm. then I'm more than likely going to have to delegate some of those tasks to other people. And I think I'll be fine with doing that, as long as I can find, you know, somebody that I can trust and know will do a good job. I'm kind of a little bit of a perfectionist, mm-hmm. so I may have some trouble letting some of those things go, because I like to oversee and make sure things are done how I want them done. Mm-hmm.
That is one thing. Every brewmaster, they are all perfectionists. Yep. I've not met one that doesn't just, that dots all the I's, crosses all the T's. Yeah, that's one commonality, I think, between all the brewers mm-hmm. out there.
Okay, so all your ingredients, it made me think, do you get local... Is it mash, stuff?
Like the grains.
Grains?
Yeah. That was the question that I was going to have follow when you were asking all those businessy questions. Okay. Mr. Business pants over here. I would see a hiccup happening between the relationship between the hop farms and all the brewers, and just the back and forth, the supply and demand. Okay, mm-hmm. so now there's less breweries, so there's less options for the hop. Do you get hop farmers? Do you get to take advantage of that? There's a hop farm in our area that mm-hmm. I thought they were doing good, but they closed their mm-hmm. doors a few years ago. Yep. So, like, what's the relationship like between the hop farms and you guys right now?
I've had a couple of the hop farms reach out, and, you know, we've got some hops from some of the local places around here. But, you know, as far as, like, where I typically source my ingredients and stuff, you know, I would love to keep things local, but, mm-hmm. You know, sometimes... In the startup stage, I kind of have to, you know, be cognizant of the bottom line and make mm-hmm. sure that, you know, I am able to make a profit, you know, at the end of the day. So, but yeah, as far as like the hop farms, I haven't really had many people reach out as far as that. So, there was a pretty big inventory of hops when I took over. So I'm still actually working through that. So
okay.
I haven't had to really deal with that yet.
Nice. I think we're kind of coming to a close, but I wanted to chat a little bit more about your collab beer and the mm-hmm. The Dam Race. What's your guys' affiliation with the Dam Race in Crofton?
So we got invited last year to be the official beer of the dam race, and that was right when I took over the brewing operation, which was super exciting because we had never been to the dam race, so it was our first event, and it was actually the first time we poured any beer that I had brewed out of the commercial system.
Oh, wow.
So yeah.
I think I remember you saying that, and wasn't there another lady? Was that your wife that was helping?
Yeah.
I remember them. Yeah.
So you guys were going out on a limb, like... Yeah, I mean, straight out of the gate.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Was it an apricot?
No. Nope. Yeah. So we actually had the beachcomber there.
Okay. There we go. Yep.
I've made a few tweaks to it since that time.
Okay.
And we had the Lane 8 lager. So that one is still, the Lane 8 has been the one that's sold the most over the last
Didn't you guys year. Like sell out? I mean, it was like a hot.
We were out by like, I think 10, 30.
Yeah.
Yeah. We brought two kegs. So we'll have to adjust for this year and bring
that
a little
might
more.
Say more about Northeast Nebraska than anything.
And on top of that, everyone who was drinking beer had already had one of Doug's Bloody Marys. at least one. Yeah.
Oh, so good. Yeah. So then this year you're doing your own.
Yep.
A new one.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys are coming and then pouring it too.
Yeah, okay. We'll be there this year. Awesome. We're looking forward to it.
Okay.
Last year was a ton of fun.
Cool.
Okay.
So an exclusive collab beer there. The Dam Race is July 26th. If folks are interested in coming about that, if you listened to our last couple of episodes, we recorded in Crofton, so you've heard a little bit about this. So one more time, Crofton's with an S, damrace.com. Go on there, check it out. You can sign up. It's a triathlon. But instead of a swimming, it's got a kayaking piece. You can do it as a team, which is what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
We did it last year. We had fun. We didn't do awesome, but we had fun.
We were not point. Winners, yeah. but...
This year, we're destined to do better, I'm sure. Andy is probably coaching us again. So.
I think so. I think I've got to up my coaching game.
He's going to be bringing the heat from the sideline.
Bringing motivation.
Yeah, yeah. But it is a lot of fun, so I would encourage folks to check it out. Get on there and sign up and come up and see us and try some hard patch beer. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, man. Anything that you wish we would have asked that we didn't when you were thinking about coming into this? Anything that you wanted to cover?
No, I think we hit a lot of the points that I was anticipating. So, yeah I think we...
Oh, good.
Yeah, we did a lot of...
I learned a lot here.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks for having us, man. It's an awesome place.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast with you
100%. Yeah. Looking forward to seeing you in July.
Absolutely.
All right, we'll shut it down.
All right, peace.
See you guys.
Later.